Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Then an awful good girl, Santa baby. So hurry down the chimney tonight. Baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby. So hurry down the chimney tonight.
That's the University of Illinois Rip Chords from a couple years ago when my daughter was attending the University of Illinois. It was kind of funny watching Dave. It was kind of like me. We're kind of bebopping here. And
a 54 convertible will do. Clever line.
One of those classic, maybe one of those classic T-Birds with the
That's the first thing that came to mind. Yeah.
The hard top pull off to make it the convertible?
Yep.
Yep.
That's the first thing that came to mind.
Two-seat T-Bird then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think
those were two-seaters then.
Mm-hmm. And the early Corvettes were also.
Well, Corvettes were always
two-seaters. Always two-seaters, yes. Okay.
If you see a four-seater, though, we'll help buy that because that would be like...
I was thinking of something else, but you're right. Corvettes have always been two-seaters.
Well, that's Dave Schwann in the newsroom. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. A little bit of Christmas music here, and I figure that'll help blunt some of the political rhetoric that's going on. We've been talking about this past week of debates, and... you're really seeing this theme now of in the Republican presidential debate that Jeb Bush, whose campaign has been kind of languishing, is really on this calculated strategy that the only way he's going to try to make the numbers move is to go after Donald Trump. Here's one of their exchanges in last week's Republican presidential debate.
We need toughness. Honestly, I think Jeb is a very nice person. He's a very nice person, but we need tough people. We need toughness. We need intelligence, and we need tough. Jeb said when they come across the southern border, they come as an act of love.
You said in September 30th that ISIS was not a
am I
not
talking or are you talking, Jeb?
I'm talking right now. I'm talking.
You can go back. You're not
talking.
You interrupted me,
September 30th,
Jeb. Are
you
going to apologize, Jeb? No. Am I allowed to finish?
Yeah, one at a time.
Excuse
go ahead,
me. Am I allowed to finish?
Go ahead, Mr. Trump.
So,
little of your
again,
own medicine there.
I know you're trying to build up your energy, Jeb, but it's not working.
One at a time.
Well.
Yeah.
Look. We need a toughness. We need strength. We're not respected as a nation anymore. We don't have that level of respect that we need. And if we don't get it back fast, we're just going to go weaker, weaker, and just disintegrate. We can't allow that to happen. We need strength. We don't have it. When Jeb comes out and he talks about the border, and I saw it, and I was witness to it, and so was everyone else, and I was standing there, they come across as an act of love. He's saying the same thing right now with radical Islam. And we can't have that in our country. It just won't work. We need strength.
Governor Bush.
Donald, you're not going to be able to insult your way to the presidency. That's not going to happen. And I do have the strength.
A little exchange there between the Donald and Jeb exclamation point. Well, joining me now in this segment of the Sunday Spin is another Tribune colleague, Annie Sweeney, who covers the police and courts for the Chicago Tribune. Annie, thanks for getting up with me this morning.
Sure thing, Rick.
Well,
thanks for having me.
I mentioned at the outset of the show that police and courts reporter, and really you don't find that intersection so strong as you do right now with the Department of Justice now in town taking a look at the Chicago Police Department.
That is true. There's several different levels going on here. There's a criminal investigation, two really. There's the civil rights investigation by the Department of Justice. So, there is a lot going on. It's been a very busy 3 weeks, for sure.
Now, in reading some of the stories about this that you've written with others at the paper, and this seems like one of the biggest jobs for DOJ to ever tackle as part of that practices and pattern investigation is the Chicago Police Department.
It is. It is. If not the largest, one of the largest departments they've looked at. You know, there's 10,000 officers in the department that they have to take a look at. look at the whole system of how they're how the excessive force is used, and beyond that, how it's investigated.
I know you talked to the person who's head of the Civil Rights Division at DOJ, and you know, to me, a lot of people still ask questions about, you know, what are they going to look at, what aren't they going to look at. Can you maybe walk us through that a little bit?
Sure. It's called a pattern and practice investigation because what they're looking for are systemic problems within the department. So they're not looking at individual officers, although there is one officer that was involved in this shooting that has led to the investigation. As you know, I think, Rick, you know, there have been years of concerns raised in civil suits, raised by I think the media has done numerous stories over the years documenting concerns about the Chicago Police Department. So what Loretta Lynch laid out, you know, when she announced the probe, is that they'd be looking at excessive force specifically, and as well as kind of the intake investigation, the handling of those incidents. So when citizens come forward and complain about an individual officer, how is that handled? How thorough is the investigation? Do they get to the bottom of it? And what's the follow-up? So it is limited, but, you know, this has been done in other departments, and there's no reason why the Chicago Police Department can't use this as an opportunity to kind of look at other issues.
Well, indeed, you talked to some, you know, experts involved in criminal justice and policing and that kind of thing, and they're saying the city shouldn't necessarily wait till the outcome of what could be a 2-year investigation to start making changes. They should be proactive.
Right. They absolutely. More than one expert told us that there's no reason for Rahm Emanuel or anyone in the department to wait. So even before this investigation was announced, Rahm Emanuel had announced a task force. I think it was maybe a week before. But at any rate, and many people at the time said to us, there have been numerous task force here who have, you know, looked at this issue, and they weren't sure what to make of it. However, that task force might be in a position to do some of the proactive work that the experts are talking about. In fact, a member of the task force told me she expected they would be. You know, they'll be sending recommendations to the city council, to the mayor. What happens with them, I don't know.
But there are also concerns, too, that when you look at that task force, for example, you know, and you've heard this in some of the protests about how, well, we can't wait till March.
Right. Wait till March. When the
for recommendations to be.
Oh, yeah, sure. They don't. Yeah, I think, well, clearly people want some movement and action now, right? They're asking for resignations from the mayor, from Anita Alvarez. So I think it will be interesting to see how quickly they come up with anything specific. This week already there were meetings with the DOJ and Emanuel. I haven't been given any timetable, so I'm not sure when to expect anything. But
and of course, there was also talk too that from DOJ that they want to make sure that community involvement, the community's voice, is heard in this.
Yes, that's a huge piece of this. I've been told there'll be closed door meetings with community members. They may or may not follow up with individuals who have brought a complaint in the past to ask, you know, what was the process like? What were the interviews like? Did anyone follow up with you? How hard did they try to interview you? Did they call you once? Did they call you more than one time? Do you feel like you were treated fairly?
We're speaking with Annie Sweeney, my colleague at the Chicago Tribune, who covers police and courts, and we're talking about the Department of Justice Pattern and Practices investigation into the Chicago Police Department. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa la 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 la. Tis the season to be jolly, fa la 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 la. Done we now our gay apparel, fa la 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 la. Troll the ancient yuletide carol, fa la 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 la. See the blazing mule before us. Fa la 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 la. Strike the harp and join the chorus. Fa la 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 la. Follow me in merry measure. Fa la 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 la. While I tell of Yuletide treasure. Fa la 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 la. Fast away the old year passes. Fa la 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 la. Hail the new ye lads and lasses. Fa la 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 la. Sing we joyous all together. Fa la 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 la. Heedless of the wind and weather. Fa la 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 la. Fa la 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 la.
Special thanks to the University of Illinois Ripcords for our Christmas music this morning. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, and joining me on the phone is Annie Sweeney, who's a colleague at the Tribune covering police and courts. We're talking about the DOJ pattern and practices investigation into the Chicago Police Department. And Annie, one question people have asked is this issue about the code of silence, and something that Mayor Rahm Emanuel has acknowledged, even though at times the city has tried to fight any kind of affirmation of this, the police union saying that they aren't really going to discuss it at a city council joint committee hearing last week. Is that also part of the pattern and practices that might come under review by DOJ?
You know, it's not specifically mentioned by the government as an area. You know, they're not saying we want to come in and explore and unpack this code of silence, but certainly I think it's an issue that is related to the whole process of investigations and getting to the bottom of citizen complaints and or, you know, excessive force incidents. So will they specifically address it? I don't know, but perhaps the city, if it does take a proactive approach, might take a closer look at it. It is hard to tell. I have heard that the DOJ, I'm sorry, does try to stay focused on what their stated areas of investigation are.
But they say that they're not going to leave any stone unturned in this
investigation.
That's so
right, exactly. And I think it's hard to imagine that this doesn't come up when you're looking at investigations and how they learn what happened in the aftermath of the Laquan McDonald shooting. The police reports that were released under a Freedom of Information request suggest that the responding officers didn't describe the incident as it happened. So it's already really an issue.
So what is the bottom line here after DOJ? And let's say they do find something here, and they do find a problem here. What is the process going forward? How is that remedied or adjudicated?
Mm-hmm. So after the very long investigation, a year or more, they will issue a findings letter or document, which will state whether, in fact, they found any systemic problems. Every expert I've spoken to believes they will, that they don't tend to start these unless it's heading in that direction. And then after that, they have indicated they intend to have a court-enforced plan to fix it, which is very often like a consent decree. So they go to a judge, a federal judge, and begin the process of implementing the reforms. An independent monitor is often brought in to help in that process, to help figure out what needs to be done.
And that monitor will assess the progress that's being made.
Right, and then there will be numerous updates to the judge about how they're doing, what progress is being made. It is lengthy. I think it was 12 years, before a judge lifted. Now, that doesn't mean there wasn't progress made within that time period.
But you note in one story that L.A. went through three mayors and three mm-hmm. police chiefs before that consent decree was lifted.
Right, and that is another interesting thing to me that's been pointed out by the experts, that what happens really does depend on your mayor and your police chief in terms of movement and how quickly things happen. Some cities fight it initially. You know, they may say, we think you're wrong. We don't have these problems. And that obviously would delay things.
Well, and then there's also a cost involved, too. I mean, to implement any reforms or changes in the through the court monitoring process, I know you had one expert said that that could approach $100 million.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, that's a lot of money. But I think the city's last estimate of, I think, like a decade of legal costs and lawsuits is like $500 million. So, you know, so it's costly either way.
But, you know, let's face it, if it's spending money for progress versus spending money for avoiding litigation for wrongful issues, I think everybody would probably side with progress.
Certainly. I think, you know, those are just financial costs. I think there's a whole lot of other costs that people would point to if you don't fix these kind of issues.
That's Annie Sweeney. She's police and courts reporter, my colleague at the Chicago Tribune. Annie, thanks for getting up with me this morning.
You bet. Thanks. Have a great day.
You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN.